Our next topic is policies for preventing teen tobacco use, what works and what doesn't. And this will be presented by Dr. Patrick Remington. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Chronic Disease and Injury Epidemiology for the Wisconsin Division of Health. He's received numerous honors and awards and several grants. I'm just going to name a couple. He's received the Barbara Lang Health Education Award just last year. He's received the Exceptional Performance Award for Breast and Cervical Cancer Control from the Wisconsin Division of Health, and also the Basic Prevention Award from the Wisconsin Public Health Association. And he's so young. Can you believe it? Dr. Remington, welcome.
Good morning. I'm not that young, actually. I wanted to talk about, I have 15 minutes, that's not a lot of time, but I think that forces you to be very concise and just to say a few things, which I'd like to do. One thing is to talk about myself. You heard, really, as practitioners, the science part of my background. But I have to say that when I go and talk with scientists in academic settings, they talk about the practice side of my career, how I work in public health, and some of that is actually not very good because the scientists don't think I have a great scientific credentials. I don't publish much first authored peer-reviewed research, and they view me as an advocate with less than stellar scientific credentials. And when I get into groups of practitioners, they sort of dismiss me outright as being an academic and not really being very practical and not sure of how to work in real practice settings. But I think it's important to kind of have some people working in that area where you work between science and practice. And it's been 15 years, and I finally figured out that I'm really a translator of science into practice. I see sometimes that being done very well, and then I see sometimes that it's not done at all. There's a great body of scientific literature, and then the practice doesn't follow at all. I might say, you know, with Representative Dobbins in a leadership position in the Ledge Council, that right now in Wisconsin, there's a great example of science being translated into practice, proposed to be translated into practice. I have sat and watched the Ledge Council work, and I see a number of people who are members of the Ledge Council here, and it's just great. I think that's probably, in 15 years of work, the best example of good science being pulled out one by one. People find the papers. The Ledge Council lawyers, actually, I come from a family of lawyers, and it always amazes me when they do good quality work and base it in truth and not in which side you're on. But Dick Sweet and the other attorneys they know more than I do about the science of what's going on right now. So I just, with that as an introduction, next slide, please. I'd like to talk about three things today. One is to describe recent trends in youth smoking in Wisconsin, because when I was getting ready for this talk, it's amazing. You'd think I'd have these numbers, but when I look for them, I can't find them, and they come with all sorts of caveats. So I just put those numbers up and for everybody to look at. Second is review briefly the four health policies directed at youth that we're talking about in this country and in the Ledge Council. And I am not talking about school health education. And that is a huge area, obviously addressed earlier, which has tremendous impact. But as you heard, school education, good education programs that are effective, that are done in a vacuum, delay but don't prevent tobacco use. That kids who go out into the real world with good intentions, after good school-based education, basically start later. And that's been well shown, unless you have the supportive environment through policies to help them. And finally, I'd like to summarize recent experience in other states. That's what the first speaker talked about, is you can do scientific studies, but until you see how they really apply into practice, you're never sure. And we have good laboratories right now in California and Massachusetts, Michigan, and Arizona, where we're seeing how these policies get put into practice and what's happening. Next slide. Well, I think this is a slide from the Monitoring the Future project. The University of Michigan is paid handsomely, I might add, but they do a very nice job of monitoring senior smoking rates. Since 1975, they have monitored smoking rates nationwide. Random sample, excellent methodology. This is what's happening among our high school seniors. That's the top line, the 12th graders. And you can see, beginning in 75, when we first started looking, there was a sharp decline through the end of the 70s. And actually, that sort of followed a trend from the 60s. And I base that on all the stuff that we remember from the late 60s, the active media campaign, the fairness doctrine, the Surgeon General spinoff and community response to smoking as a health problem. Basically, smoking's bad for you kids, you shouldn't smoke. I think what happened around 1980 is the tobacco industry woke up and said, we're losing our base here, and we need to stabilize this. And you can see for the 80s, the rates stabilized right around 30%. And then maybe it was one individual, maybe it was a collective thought. Around 1990, there was a new strategy put on the table in the tobacco industry, and that is, let's really market aggressively to kids. Let's promote brands like Camel, Marlboro, Newport to kids and see if we can't bring that market in. About that time, the Monitoring the Future project started looking at 8th and 10th graders. Thought that in addition to looking at seniors, what's happening in the younger grades. And you can see by the time they started in the 8th grade, smoking was already going up. 10th grade also going up around 1990. And then 12th grade, it's delayed a little bit. That's a cohort phenomenon, that as they go from 8th to 10th to 12th grade, they're smoking at higher rates. So by 1996, smoking rates in 10th graders are higher than they were in seniors just 5 years before. That to me, you know, as an epidemiologist, I follow the trends in cancer. In 1990, great news. Cancer mortality is going down. Looking at this thing, I say 2010, bad news. Cancer mortality will go up. No question about it. We will see a blip in cancer mortality, lung cancer, tobacco-related cancer, and other chronic diseases, chronic lung disease. There is no question that unless something happens, some new science on how to get kids off of cigarettes once they've started, that this will be a cancer blip in 20 to 30 years. So I want that, really we have to remember this slide. This is a very important slide that making progress in the 70s, stalled in the 80s with our kids, and then going in the completely wrong direction. And I know we talk about this anecdotally, but here, this is very good data, very good science. Next slide. Now, what about Wisconsin? Well, we don't have high school surveys to go on in Wisconsin since 1970s. And this is a little bit complicated slide, but I'll focus. It's in the book, in the briefing book. And I'll focus you basically on the, oh, thanks. Basically, right along here. If you look at this column, these are the percentages of people, smokers today, who started smoking when they were kids, 17 years of age or younger. And if you're 65 years old today, only about half of you started when you were a kid. But watch what happens as you get younger. 45 to 64, it was 62%. 35 to 44, 72%. And young adults today, 25 to 34, 83% started smoking as kids. It is clearly becoming a pediatric disease, which David Kessler now coined the term. And that's true not only for first cigarette, but regular cigarettes. 19% regular smoker. 19% became regular smokers in over 65, now it's 62%. Only 12% of women, now 63% of women. That, to me, says one thing, that smoking is becoming a pediatric disease. In the past, adults might have picked up a habit, as we called it years ago, and started smoking in their 20s and 30s. Now, kids pick up an addiction and really lose the free choice. I don't like the word habit anymore. It's clearly an addiction. These are Wisconsin data, 1995 telephone survey data. So you can clearly see that among young adults today, they're starting to smoke as children. Next slide. What about our high school surveys? These are numbers from our youth behavioral risk factor surveys. We've conducted them since 1991 through our DPI. And you can see in Wisconsin, 91, 23% of these are 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders. Basically, high school overall. High school students overall. 23% smoked in the last 30 days, 1993, at 25%. Not sure whether that number is going up or down. 1995 jumps to 37%. Now, I have two stars there because we had a poor response rate that year. Just a few schools responded. And there's criticism as to whether that's representative and whether we should believe that number. But I put the U.S. data, which is based on thousands and thousands of schools surveyed throughout the country and many other states. And to me, Wisconsin reflects a trend that's being seen nationally. 27% in 91, 30% in 93, and 35% in 95. Next slide. Well, what about policies? I'm going to just briefly talk about four policies. This slide shows data from Canada. The skinny line going down is the percent smokers. And that's dropping among kids from about 46% to about 16%. It's an amazing decline in Canada. Remember, the Wisconsin or the U.S. numbers from 80 to 90 were very flat. In Canada, a precipitous decline in youth smoking. And why? It's pretty simple. The line going up to the right is the real price of cigarettes. It increased from about 90 cents to about $2.50. Now, those are inflation-adjusted dollars. They basically increased the price of cigarettes 2.5 times with $3 and $4 excise taxes. Tremendous increase in the price of cigarettes has a tremendous impact on youth smoking. And again, not a scientific study, but science has shown that when you raise the price of cigarettes in all the economic models, we did a study comparing state cigarette excise tax increases. When you raise the price of cigarettes, consumption goes down. In youth, it's even more pronounced. A 10% increase in price, 10, 15, even 20% decline in youth smoking. That science is very, very firm. Next slide. Well, what about, this may be a little hard to see, I wanted to talk about three other strategies: mass media, community-based programs, and restricting sales to youth. It's important to remember, if you have a strategy, again, if it's an educational strategy, what are you trying to do? You're trying to reduce the demand for cigarettes. Mass media is a similar strategy. We want to reduce the demand for cigarettes, change the cultural and, and society's norm. But it's not cheap. If we use Canada or California's numbers or Massachusetts numbers, they've been effective, but they have spent, on a Wisconsin size, about $10 to $20 million on mass media, on counter-advertising. Community-wide programs, same findings. Wisconsin is one of 17 states funded by the National Cancer Institute. Our 17 states have now shown a decline in smoking of about 6 to 7% compared to the control states in this country. To me, that's kind of a good laboratory evidence of community-wide programs. Again, that's very expensive. We're only investing $1 million a year in our state. What they're investing in Massachusetts and California is 5 and 10 times that. In statewide, community-by-community programs to pass ordinances, to really put tobacco prevention on the community agenda. And finally, restricting sales to minors. It isn't that hard to do. We have the laws on the books. We have mechanisms in communities. Madison right now and Fond du Lac and other communities have really put the machinery in place to enforce these laws. But I might add that that is a supply-oriented a strategy. And if we only did that, keep the demand up and try and turn off the supply, it's a very frustrating strategy for kids, for community enforcement agency, for police, that you still have high demand and what you're trying to do is cut off the supply. And finally, how do we put this all together? That's it for the slide. How do we put this all together? My sense is that you look at other experiences in California, again in Massachusetts, that the tax base, the price incentive, disincentive by a cigarette excise tax has another unintended benefit. If it's a strategy to reduce demand by increasing price, it also produces revenue. And the unfortunate aspect of the educational programs and the mass media programs, community-based programs, is that they have a price tag. And so states like Massachusetts and California have taken those tax dollars raised from cigarette excise taxes and dedicated them to tobacco prevention. In this state, we did a survey of adult attitudes or opinions about that procedure. 1995, the data haven't been released, but when they are, you'll see 75% of adults in this state favor raising the excise tax if those dollars are dedicated to tobacco prevention. I guess I have a few minutes for questions?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
On the slide, we saw a nice relationship between the prevalence of smoking and the price of cigarettes. Were there other things going on in Canada at that time, such as mass media approaches, that might also have affected those lines on the graph?
That's a good question and a real criticism of community observation trials. It was not controlled. You cannot be certain that the raise in the increase in price was directly responsible for that. But there are two pieces of evidence that support it. One is that the models, the economic models that predict responsiveness among kids to prices, would have predicted this exactly. So it followed what was expected. So it's consistent with the science, not necessarily being proven in this setting, but it's consistent with the science. The other evidence says that during that time, during the 1980s, there were no large-scale mass media counter-advertising campaigns in Canada. The sense was what was going on in Canada was about like the U.S. And so they've used the U.S. numbers as kind of a control. Now, anybody who's worked or lived in Canada, especially the Canadians, would not like that comparison. And it's probably not a truly valid control group. But I think in the U.S., with no change in smoking among our youth and the Canadian rapid decline, the biggest difference between the two countries was the rapid rise in price in Canada and the stable inflation-adjusted price in this country. That was really the remarkable difference between the two countries. But again, I would not put that into hard science. That really is the best opinion of scientists.
There are more deaths related to cigarettes and alcohol combined than all other drugs, and what other drugs are included in all other drugs? Is that right?
Well, in this state, we looked at our data, and when you look at tobacco alone, you come up with, I think, a conservative estimate of about 8,000 deaths each year. And when you add alcohol, it's another 1,900 or 2,000 deaths. So close to 10,000 deaths. That represents about 25% of all premature mortality. When we look at all other drugs combined, we come up with about 400 other drug-related deaths. And that's all other drugs, prescription, illegal drugs combined.